Welcome to The Break Breakdown, a podcast by Queensbird Films about what it takes to break through and finally land your big break. I'm your host, Courtney Romano. Firstly, I just want to say thank you so much for being here. I was listening to another podcast by my friend Michelle Pelazon, who owns the company Holisticism, and their podcast is the 12th House podcast, and absolutely go listen and subscribe and basically follow everything she does. But I was listening to one of her episodes, and she and her guest were discussing this kind of reversal of the question, like, what would you do if you had no fear? And the reversal of the question was more, what would you do if it was never going to be a big hit? If it was never going to make you a lot of money, and if you were kind of speaking into the void? And I answered that, and my answer was the filmmaking that I'm currently doing and this podcast. And I wanted to share with you, you know, this podcast started as a way to kind of open up the process and reveal the process behind how I made Screen Test, my short film. And it has just turned into so much more than that. I feel like I'm on this investigative journey with The Break Breakdown. I'm getting to speak with all these amazing people who are laying out the blueprint on how to break through in each of their individual paths and stories and ethos. And I am just so grateful that you are here and we are kind of living in this space together, listening to these stories and getting to unpack what it really means to, I mean, I guess what it really means to live life to the absolute fullest and most honest extent that you can. And I'm not saying that I do that, but in listening and learning and talking with people who do, I am learning so much more every time I record an episode. And I wanted to let you know that it's just me on the other side of this mic. I am my own booker and researcher and host and editor, as you might be able to tell, and make all my own marketing assets. So each podcast episode takes a really long time to make, but I'm telling you that kind of nitty-gritty part of it because I just want you to know that it's truly all coming from my heart, every single episode. I try to do my best to learn and get better and take out the likes and ums and superfluous stories that, like, no one needs to hear. I really give myself critical feedback every time I edit an episode, just trying to get better. And I want you to know that even if this podcast would never make money or would never be a breakthrough hit, I would still want to do it. And I would still want to come into the space with you, whoever you are listening right now, and be in this space. I would still want to do it. And I am so grateful that I get to be here and do this. If you found any of these episodes to be valuable, I would also be so grateful if you haven't already to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts and then share it on social. Those are two things that are kind of the gold standard when it comes to getting the word out by word of mouth, which is really all that truly matters. I think I listen to everything that I listen to because someone that I love and trust told me to listen to it. And if social isn't your thing and you don't want to share there or leave a review, I absolutely understand that. And even just sending a text to a friend like, hey, you should listen to this episode, I think you'd like it, is a huge boost. It really is. It goes such a long way. And I'd be so grateful if you did that. And beyond that, again, I just want to say thanks for showing up week after week. I'm so happy you do, and I'm going to keep showing up too. I have some really, really exciting things in store for the end of the summer. All summer long, we have some amazing guests, and I'm just so thrilled to be able to share their stories and these conversations with you. So let me introduce you to the amazing human being on this week's episode. Joseph Limas is a creator, an actor, voice actor, comedian, mover, puppeteer, writer, facilitator, and friend. Joseph, through his production company, Joe Myray Productions, has been producing original content since 2014, and it can be seen everywhere from YouTube to Beyonce's Instagram account. Like, yes, legitimately. He's been creating all of this work in all of these avenues, and then I think about maybe a year and a half ago, she posted one of his videos in her stories. Like, what? Talk about breaking through. And as Joseph said, she co-signed his life by doing so. He was so wonderful to talk to. When I tell you I could have talked to him all night, I mean, you'll hear the episode and you'll be like, yes, you kept going on and on. I edited out some stuff just because I was like, we got to tighten this up. I just love talking to him. Joseph was a masterclass in knowing who you are and unapologetically leaning fully into your honest to God truth. He's also at a point in his career where he's getting meetings, he's getting into rooms, he's pitching, he's doing all of these very exciting things that almost feel like so esoteric when you're first starting out and wondering how you're going to make this happen. And he is in the process right now of truly breaking through, which I think is just such a great time to chat with someone. So we cover everything from what it's like when he's actually in the room, what that process is actually kind of bringing up for him creatively and just as a human, how his creative process has evolved or not from breaking through, and then also his mindset when he goes into these rooms and when he leaves them. And we talk about the value of telling simple stories. And he gives maybe the best definition of success that I have ever heard. Like, I felt it in my bones. I felt it. I had tingles all over my body, just chills. It was so beautiful. So, oh man, I feel like I could go on and on again about Joseph, but like, you really just need to hear from him. Before I do that, I want to tell you that you can find Joseph on Instagram at Joe Myray and on Facebook at Joe Myray Productions and on YouTube at Joe Myray. And all of that information is going to be in the show notes. So make sure that you follow him and check out all of the work that's happening right now online. And yeah. Okay. Without further ado, here is the brilliant Joseph Limus. I'm so excited to talk to you. From everything that I've researched on you, you have a past that is so particularly yours. That's kind of a weird way to say it. Like, of course it's yours, it's you. But something that you've carved out, I feel, in this kind of fog of content that we are living in on social. And you have such a distinct style and voice. And I'm wondering, a lot of times I think I'm in such good therapy right now. And so childhood is a big place that I'm living in my brain.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so I'm wondering about your childhood and what it was like living in New Orleans and growing up there.
Yeah. So first, I just want to speak to what you were speaking towards about my own path and what I'm carving. And I think branding myself years ago has really helped with me being specific about the work that I create. And I decided years ago that those things were going to come from, I was going to be a person that deals with comedy and self-liberation. And so I think channeling the work that I do in whatever form it takes to those two different things really has helped me kind of define who I am as an individual and as an artist. So that's one. And so New Orleans, I was born in New Orleans, but I'm an Army brat. I left New Orleans when I was 4 years old, but New Orleans was always and is always home. That's where my extended family still lives to this day. So I spent my summers in New Orleans, but most of my life as a young person, I bounced around. So from Germany to Missouri to Texas, Mississippi, Louisiana. And then grew up and got a career in arts that took me on tours. And so then I toured even in my adulthood. And so I think I've grown up kind of around the world. And I think that a part of my brand and who I am is the fact that I've been forced to be in new situations with new people. And it has made me, I think, able to navigate a lot of different kinds of spaces and ideas.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Just because I've interviewed some other people who have moved around a lot and how much that influences your art making and running into, a variety of people kind of offsetting your center in a way, being mm-hmm. like, well, yeah, people do it like that over here, but people do it like this over here. So they're both yeah. valid and equally true.
Yeah.
What's interesting is you were talking about the idea of self-liberation in your brand. I know I asked about New Orleans and I'm like kind of jumping back again, but what you said really like struck a chord. And so I kind of want to follow it. How did you decide that self-liberation was something that was maybe a brand pillar or a core value for you?
Because I grew up in a very Southern Christian home and I'm a very open-minded, very gay person. And I had a little bit of time in conversion therapy as a young person, as a teenager, when I came out of the closet. And I think there's something about the kind of, I don't know, persona that you must present. One, as just a Southerner, two, as like a Black male Southerner, and like what it's like to go out into the world and navigate dangerous situations. And yeah, kind of all of the kind of stifling that creates in a person. I think once I moved to New York and realized there was more space for me to say and do and be all that I am, I realized that that's what I was doing. I realized that I was liberating myself. I realized that my father was very much against me shaking my ass, you know, around the house and like dancing, quote unquote, like a girl. And now I could dance however I want, wherever I want, anytime I want. Mm-hmm. And that is, I mean, that's just one part of what it means for me to do and practice self-liberation.
Sure. And was moving to New York like a kind of a defining moment for that of saying, hey, I'm going to move here and this is where I'm focusing my energy. And now this is the community I'm a part of.
Yeah, I think it is. I don't think that I've actually thought about that a whole lot. I know that I've always loved New York, and some of my friends have called me a New York snob because I can talk your ear off about like why you should not live anywhere else.
Yes.
But I also could yes. talk your ear off about why you shouldn't live here. And if you don't like it and you want to leave, get the hell out.
This is it. This is yeah. it about New York. This is yeah. all of it that people don't understand. It's like it is a terrible place and it's awful. So wonderful.
Amazing.
Like it's both. And if yeah. you don't appreciate that, then like it's going to be a struggle. But if you're like, oh, yes, this is the shittiest wonderland of your dreams, then like you get it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I got off the plane I was 19 when I first got here, just for a summer. Was my plan to spend a summer here. And I got off the plane having never looked at a map, having no idea what this place was, and arrived and realized that it was just the set of every movie I'd seen, that I was just seeing movies everywhere.
Yes.
And realizing that people were doing whatever the hell they wanted to be doing in the streets.
Yes.
And I was able to get lost in a way that, you know, I knew my way home and I knew that the one train went straight down and it went straight back up to my home and no one knew where I was and I could do anything that I wanted. And that was a very exciting and very liberating experience, being a 19-year-old completely alone.
Yes.
In New York City.
Gosh. And I also think like at 19, I thought I was an adult. But now that I'm a mom and I have a 2-year-old daughter, I'm like, 19's not an adult. You were yeah. yet a child still. But that so resonates with me, the idea of just like people are, you know, getting lost doing what they're doing and how invigorating that is. Mm. I'm like honestly just like thinking back to the therapy session I had earlier today. But it like makes me just think about that connection to childhood and how you have an impulse as a child, an instinct as a child. And it's like a lot of times it can be strong. And like the further away we get from our birth, like sometimes the farther we get and like the adult world, the adult task is like trying to get back to that. And I'm wondering what did you create and how did you create as a child?
I think that I was confused by the fact that people thought that I was a creative child. I never thought that what I was doing was creativity. I remember winning most creative, you know, at the end of the year, they give all the awards, or like best smile and shit. And I got most creative, and I really didn't even understand what that was. And it didn't feel good. Like best smile and best hair felt real cool. But most creative was like, I don't really get it. But thinking back on it, I was just sharing this story with some friends recently. I completely forgot that I owned an aquarium when I was a kid, and I had guppies and mollies, and these are live bearing fish who breed very often. So they're often having a bunch of babies. We were studying Native American spear fishing. This is in fourth grade. And there was a project to do some sort of representation of that culture in whatever way you wanted to express it, right? And I got the idea to bring an aquarium with a low amount of water in it, but build out an entire like shore and put little fake men in the aquarium and have little baby mollies in the water so that they were to scale for the little Native American models. And
amazing.
Yeah, right. And my mom was half in, half out of it. She's like, I don't really think you should do all that. I don't think you need to do all that. Also, I would have to bring you to school if you did that instead of taking the bus.
Right.
But ultimately she allowed me to do it. And at the end of the year, I got the most creative award. And I was absolutely confused and hurt. I was like, this is painful. I'm going to get beat up. I'm not cool.
You're like, don't label me that.
Yeah,
don't say that.
Wow.
I'm creative.
No.
Oh man, that isn't it funny too, like the things that you remember from childhood that you're like, oh, that is me. Like I see that, and you know, from the distance that I know you from exploring your work, I'm like, right, you're setting a scene, you're creating it, you're creative directing it. You're like, okay, this is how it's gonna look, this is how I'm gonna shape it. But for you, and I think this happens with a lot of people, from what I am hearing you say, is I have also felt like things that are creative to other people that I do, to me, I'm like, it doesn't feel special. It doesn't feel like I'm doing anything particularly even interesting. It's just like, oh, that's a logical next step.
Does
your creative process still feel like that? Like when you get, you know, feedback and you're like, well, it's just kind of what I do, or does it have a different quality now?
Yeah. I think that for me, once I get an idea and create a deadline, or know that there is a deadline because the thing that I want to do is attached to something, I don't think that it feels like work. I think that it's just a train. It's just a train that I'm on. And I'm constantly having ideas, and I'm constantly at the 99-cent store or at Deals and Discounts or some other place where I can find all of the materials that I need, or Michaels or whatever it is, to build the world. Because ultimately that's, I think, what you're describing, and is kind of one of the ways I identify is as a world builder. That the industry is using the word multi-hyphenate right now. Oh. It used to be interdisciplinary artist before.
Yes.
That's out of the window. I don't know if you know, but it's now multi-hyphenate.
Yes.
And so I am a person who art directs. I'm a person who dances and moves and does puppetry and directs and all of these things and does voiceover and all of that. And ultimately, when I'm creating one of my own things, I feel like it is building a world from the inside out.
Yes. You know, our work is very different, but I can kind of connect to that and what I do, because I write and direct, right? Mm-hmm. So when I sit down to write something, I'm seeing the world and I'm building the world with words. And then like the directing is obviously taking that to the physical space. But for me, it was a very long road to get to that world building, to understand, first of all, what I wanted to see, and second of all, how to bring it through to the physical plane from the mental plane or the spiritual plane. And so I'm wondering how you got started in the industry. And when I say the industry, I have like the broadest sense of film or theater or comedy or music or like whatever the creative industry was that you were like, okay, I'm coming to New York and I'm going to enter this. I'm wondering how you started.
Wow. That's big. the fun answer is, and my grandmother was a preschool teacher, and there was a Christmas play, and they needed someone to play Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer because the kid that was supposed to, I apparently was not into being on stage. And I was not yet in school. I was a baby still, but they put me in the costume and sat me at the front of the lineup of reindeers. And there are pictures of me just in that costume with a red nose as a baby sitting in front of a bunch of, I guess, kindergartners, preschoolers, age kids, and up. And so, yeah, that was kind of the start, was a bunch of folks in an audience crying out awe at the fact that they allowed this baby to be in the thing and they put a red nose on me. Yeah, so there, followed by like church plays and doing things in that kind of capacity, through to realizing around 8 or 9 years old that acting was actually a career, that the people on television were playing pretend and being paid for it. And I could stop telling people that I wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer, that I could say, I want to be an actor. I think happened around that young. And as much as possible, I just wanted to be in spaces that allowed that to be an outlet for me. And yeah, I did some like summer, like theater camp stuff around high school. And while I was in high school, the local college invited me to come and be a part of their theater program, like their like after hours club, theater improv club thing. And I was completely bit by the bug early. And as much as I could do it, I wanted to be doing it. And I majored in theater and moved to New York. I actually did not finish school because New York became my lover. Yes. Like sophomore year of summer of college, I fell in love with New York and knew that I had to come back. And I'm very happy that I did.
Just be there and be in it. When you came to New York, did you head to like the comedy scene? Did you stick with theater? How did you enter New York?
Yeah, I actually had an audition for a short film the day I arrived. So May 20th, 2006 is that official date. And that afternoon, I like set up an audition for some weird thing that I found, I think on Craigslist. I'm pretty sure it was a Craigslist audition. And and then back then Backstage was still a like physical publication. So I'd go pick up Backstage for $2.75 every Wednesday or whatever it was and Thank audition you. From there.
The paper. Like folded in half.
Yes.
And like, and you'd have to like circle the one. It was like classified ads.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was like the old acting classifieds. Yes. And I would pick it up every week. If I had $2.75 to my name, I would get it. Or if someone was sitting next to me on the train, I would just like eyeball theirs. So I moved here and my day job was I was working retail management at Express in the Manhattan Mall. And I was doing that for a little less than a year before Backstage had an audition where they were looking for performers with the depth of an actor, the grace of a dancer, and the timing of a comedian. And I was like, sign me up. This is literally what I am.
Yes.
And so that was for a Mask Theater, Lecoq physical theater based company out in Portland, Oregon called Imago. Yes. Yeah. So
very cool.
So my intention was toward comedy, I guess a little bit. Mostly I just wanted to be in anything. But I think having training in that work really taught me like how pure comedy exists within a performer. And from there, I think I learned how to build out kind of my world of what I thought was funny and how to express myself.
Yes. What It's so funny you talking. I'm so happy you brought up the Backstage newspaper because around that time, I was in school. We're probably around the same age, and or graduating from school. And I remember getting it delivered to my college mailbox where I was in the middle
professional.
Of
Pennsylvania.
Professional.
You are a professional.
I thought I was a professional. And I would send out the black and white headshots that I had, you know, stapled at the top and bottom of my resume physically in that manila envelope. And I would like get all my stamps together and send these things out. And I just remember that being like such a tangible, like sense memory that I had. Yeah. And people don't remember the Backstage newspapers anymore. And I'm so happy that you do.
Oh, of course. I mean, it literally launched my career. I never got a chance to, you know, they always had that ad in the back, like I made it on Backstage or booked it or whatever the thing was. I actually have that story. And, you know, I got a salaried touring job that gave me a company credit card and got to see the world for free. And also, you know, perform really fun, interesting theater. And so, Backstage. Thank you, Backstage.
Thank you, Backstage. this podcast is not sponsored by Backstage.
Nope.
It could be.
Or Michael's or the 99 cent store.
Exactly. But like Backstage was like it felt like not the ticket out because it wasn't, but it was like, it was a passport you needed, you know, it was like the identification that you needed to be able to get on the train somewhere. Like you couldn't get on the train unless you know, I'm just going to kill this metaphor. Know where the station is. Okay. I'm done with that metaphor. That
awful. You can't. That's true. That's not a metaphor. That's an actual fact.
Okay. So you're in New York, you're getting work, you're taking the one train uptown, downtown, you're working, you're going out of town to tour and all that. What was the first piece of content that you created and put online?
The first thing I did was a New Year's Eve recap. So I had a really shitty 2014. Mm-hmm. I broke up with my partner who was a very abusive relationship, verbally abusive and emotionally abusive, not physically abusive. And I lost some heavy hitters in my family. I lost my great grandmother and my grandfather and my great uncle, who in my family was everyone's father. And that all kind of happened back to back within one another. And I think I spent a lot of that relationship not making work because I was busy dealing with the relationship.
Right.
And so there was kind of a weird, dark, non-creative time that I lived in. And coming out of that, I realized that I wanted to just start doing stuff. And I wrote this like weird rhyming poem thing about 2014. Why are you so mean? It's like we're playing for opposing teams. And then I decided to actually do every year since then. I've done some sort of video for New Year's Eve because of that original video.
I love that. Yeah. And was it the kind of thing where you were like, I'm just going to create this because I, like we were talking about earlier, you just have an idea and you just like flow with it and do it? Or did you have any like bigger intention behind it to say, okay, and now I'm launching my online content career?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think launching that video required me to get over a lot of insecurities that I had about what it meant to put myself online, that I'd had a lot of theater experiences and everyone has their weird or not weird relationships to social media. And you always have those people on your social media who you think are watching you actively. I don't know if everyone has this, but I feel like there are like a handful of people I'm like, this person is watching all the time. And I don't know if they are, but whenever I'm creating something, I'm like, okay, this motherfucker is probably going to be thinking about this. And, you know, you get these people in your head because you know, of your insecurities or whatever they are. And I think it really just took me getting over that and saying, this is something that I wrote. This is something that I created. It was fun to do. I'm going to put it online and wait and see what happens. And yeah, it was an experience, and people loved it. People really enjoyed it. Some people that I really respected, or respect still, complimented me. And I was like, oh, I guess this is a thing. I should be doing this, especially because climbing the ranks in the industry in New York City or anywhere is already difficult. Mm-hmm. But the fact that I can make work on my cell phone in my apartment and put it on the internet, and then thousands of people can watch it, feels way better to me than doing an open mic night and bombing in front of a bunch of comedians who don't understand who you are, you know?
Right.
It's strange.
I that again resonates with me so much, because I think for a long time, and I don't know if you've felt this at all, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say about it, but for a long time I did try to, like, quote unquote, climb the ranks of my path of being an actor and trying to be on Broadway and all of that. And I got to this point where I was like, I don't want this. Like, I don't want to climb the ranks. Look, if someone was like, here's a Broadway contract, I'm not going to say that I wouldn't want to do it, but it's not the whole system. It doesn't feel good to me. It doesn't feel like that's where I'm supposed to be. Did you ever have a period of time where you were like really trying to just fit in, make it work, and it was just like brick wall after brick wall? Or were you always kind of open to your own thing?
Yeah, so the Upright Citizens Brigade was a big part of my initial, initiation into the comedy scene here. I was very against the kind of clique nature that was there, mm-hmm. and was repelled by it. And so I ended up not following in that track. And so in that way, I felt good about knowing that I felt funny, knowing that some people in that space felt that I was funny, and knowing that I can just do my shit online and everything would be okay. And so I kind of always have felt, you know, like weirdly solo, mm-hmm. like weirdly on my own, and that's been fine. This past year, though, has been a year of me like really quickly climbing ranks. So I got representation at the beginning of 2020, and I've got great representation who is really throwing me at every wall and seeing what sticks in all of the multi-hyphenates that I am. And so what's happening now is I'm beginning to feel that crunch that you're describing, where I am really spread thin. Like, my calendar is the fullest it's ever been. And I think a lot of people have this idea that once you get into that zone where you have the representation and you're booking your first TV credit and you're pitching shows. I pitched a show to Cartoon Network just this afternoon that my partner and I created during quarantine. And so there's all these really amazing things that are happening in my career and in my life. And I thought that it would be easier on this side. I thought that getting over that hump that I've climbed over in the last year and a half now would make things easier. But actually, there's an extra email that needs to be sent because I have to communicate to my manager. And actually, the thing that I'm going in to audition for has higher stakes because my scene partner is Awkwafina. Or, you know, there's all these different things that come into play that add a level of stress and intensity. And at the same time, I still want to be making my stuff for the internet. I still want to be making my videos, which don't pay me any money. But turns out the more I have these meetings with gatekeepers and producers and folks in the industry, the more I'm finding out that they really want people who are carving their own path on TikTok and social media. So it's this weird loop-de-loop that I've done where I've done the social media thing and have really mostly taken a pretty significant break from it in the last year to develop the TV stuff. And although I'm getting in a lot of doors, there are some doors who open up and say, get famous on social media. And I'm like, wait, I'm sorry. Right. That's what I was doing in the first place. I could actually go back to that and tell all of y'all to fuck off and make my own way the way I was doing it in the beginning. So,
right. I'm so thrilled that you're bringing all of this up, because first of all, that's amazing. And all of that is amazing. Not to take away the nuance of it, because I honor the full story that you're telling me, which is it's not all amazing. There's a lot of stress to it. And there's a lot of kind of like, I'm trying not to say nuance again, just like back and forth. There's just duality to it.
Yes.
But what's interesting is years ago, I pitched a book to a bunch of agents and publishers. And the one thing that I got back was like, we love this proposal. This is back in like 2014, but you need 10,000 followers, which is hilarious now. I'm like 10,000 is essentially like having one. But at that time they said, you need to have 10,000 followers. And I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to try to get 10,000 followers, why am I then giving my, giving you X percent? Or like, why am I, why don't I just go direct to, you know, consumer audience kind of a thing.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Why am I doing this? So I, long story short, I ended up self-publishing because I am a Gemini. I am a Sagittarius rising.
When's your birthday? Happy birthday. This is Gemini season.
Yes, it was yesterday, June 1st.
Wow. Happy birthday.
Thank you. And I don't know if you, know anything about human design charts or anything like that. I don't really, but I just like typed my shit into Google the other day and found out that I'm a manifester, which basically means like you don't like to wait and you just, you have an idea and you just go. And if someone tells you to wait, you're not happy with that and you won't. And people will get pissed at you. And you need to like respect other people and inform them what you're doing. So anyway, like that was all my energy when they told me you need 10,000 followers. I was like, okay, well, I'll get 20,000 and I'll keep them to myself.
Yeah.
I didn't. Spoiler. But what I'm hearing from you and why I'm bringing that up is because I think now about, you know, the work that I'm doing and like, okay, what is a big break? You know, what is getting your break? And for me, I still wouldn't want to stop the personal things that I'm working on like that. So I'm really interested in hearing you talk about that because it seems like it's like you said, like this cycle of like, you need to be doing your own work to get noticed, to get in the door. And then when you get in the door, they're like focused on that work, oddly enough, maybe more than even like what you're pitching. Like they're looking at, it sounds like what you're saying is they're looking at like you as an entity, right? It's like, how can you keep producing and doing our marketing for us?
Right. Exactly. and I should say, you know, it's, that's not across the board. You know, there are spaces that are, that have their setup and say, hey, we want you, come do this thing. You're hired. You got the job, you booked the thing.
Right.
But there are certain elements specifically around selling a show, that kind of thing comes into play. And it's really frustrating because you hear things like, well, you can't do that because no one knows who you are. And my philosophy is you do, we're having a conversation, you know, like we're talking right now, you know who I am. Also Beyonce Knowles Carter shared one of my videos on her Instagram. Like that's like a successful thing that has happened in my life. So like, she knows my face and like, what are you actually saying? And so I think what I'm learning to do, I'm in the process, I'm in this actual growing pain process of realizing how I take back my space for myself. Because I think, you know, I spent years just only liberating myself, only doing my own comedy. And I'm now at the point where I'm playing the game a little harder, giving up a little bit more of me. And most recently figuring out how to strike that balance and actually clapping back when people say stuff like, don't forget I have to sell you. And it's like, don't forget that I had to find myself before you could sell me. Like, where are we? What are you talking about? And so just really trying to, as much as possible, inject my own humanity within the ways I create work and sell work as well.
Gosh, that's so good. That's so good.
It's hard though.
It's
so hard. Like I'm in the bed next to my partner and I'm like working in the middle of the night. I'm like, babe, are my dreams coming true? Are my dreams coming true? Is that what this is? is this my dreams coming true? Because it is, right? Like, like 15-year-old me would look at my life and say, whoa, dude, like you got some shit going on.
Yes.
You know, but ultimately being inside it, there are a lot of strings that are needing to be pulled and a lot of egos to be stroked. And mine is one of them. And I am figuring out how to best take care of myself as I climb these ranks.
Do you feel like the work you're doing inside this kind of system, as you're also working on your own thing and balancing all of that, do you feel like the work that you're doing right now is different than what you were doing kind of before this big breakthrough?
Like my own personal work, you mean? Or the work that I'm creating to be sold?
I think I mean both.
Both, yeah.
The distinction.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think the work that I make for myself for social media is staying consistent. I have found, I think, my rhythm with the way I color myself online. The work that I'm creating to be sold, I think still, yeah, it is me. It is absolutely me. I don't think that I can say that it's not. I think that the difference is that there are just other people who have pissed on it. Like there are just other people in the thing who are like, this is my territory. Although you're the creator and you're the artist, here's what I feel should be injected into this thing. And so would you be interested in putting that in / you better, or we don't talk anymore.
/ this isn't actually a question.
Yeah. So there's a bit of that. And I think, you know, along with finding my stride of taking space for myself, I'm learning to navigate those kinds of conversations, especially around, you know, me creating content that is like Black centric and a part of my own voice as a Black queer person. It is very difficult for me to be in a room with someone that's saying, oh yeah, and then put the Black in this part. And then if you just do the gay, like the gay and the Black, you know, like no one said that explicitly, but in so many words, that's the thing. It's like, you're here. I'm here in this position in a lot of ways. One, because I'm talented and I have to tell myself that. But two, because Black and gay is trending. Like diversity is trending in the industry. Mm-hmm. And so there's a big shift to push, you know, Issa Rae and Lena Waithe's production companies and getting those faces and our faces on television and our stories to be told. And I think that that's absolutely wonderful and it's long overdue, but we're dealing with a bunch of people who are fumbling on the other side of the table who don't really know how to speak to it. And so that's been something as well that we're going through.
Right. Because what's fascinating in the, in the industry, in many industries, is how like the gatekeeping set of people are like, yes, let's push these things, but let's not like think about who's on our board. Let's not think about who's in, you know, and not to say, I don't know what your experience is, so I'm not trying to make this about yours specifically, but if people are like, let's, push diverse stories that we've never pushed before because like the inherent racism in the room, like, is there any inward reflection about who's in that first room before inviting everyone else in, which is, an unseating of this time. I feel like there's like I hope there's an unseating of this time where like, you know, everyone that's being brought into the rooms where things happen are like mixing it all up in a way that like we come out on the other side of this with like, just a different set of rules. You know what I mean? A different way of doing things, a different standard for, I blame everything on capitalism, like everything. Like I get in a fight with my husband, capitalism fucked us up. Like it was capitalism's fault.
Yeah, no, I totally hear that.
I mean,
I actually just sidebar.
Yes.
I listened to a couple of episodes and there was one where you casually referenced the fact that you had talked about MLMs in one of your episodes. And I didn't go back and I didn't hear the episode, but like, I just felt your energy come through that. And so, yeah, I just, I, I hear you.
Wait, you're pulling out something so on the surface right now, because I have this thing I need to write about MLMs and it's like living up here. And mm-hmm. so I'm just going to mark that as like the universe yeah. being like, get on that. Because yeah. I told my friend my idea for it and she's like, okay, so basically you just want to rail on capitalism. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
That's the theme.
Tis the season all the time.
Tis the season all the time. But what's interesting, right, is like, okay, I hate capitalism, sure. But I also, we also can't like dissociate from it. Like we can't like change an entire economy of a country, like a setup right. or system of a country by just being like, I reject this. I mean, maybe someone can, I can't, like, I don't have that kind of intelligence or fortitude to lead that cause. Yeah. So I wonder, this is like a really rude, difficult question because it's just so big, but like, are there ways that you're finding navigating this like very odd structure and system? And by odd, I just mean like terrible.
Yeah, just absolutely just like violent, just violent.
Yes, violent, inhumane, inappropriate, mm-hmm. racist, sexist, homophobic mm-hmm. shit. How are you? And now like you're getting these big breaks, which like we want, like I want you to have, you want to have, like that is mm-hmm. a good thing, but it's within this system. Do you have any kind of intuition or thought or experience with, all right, now that I'm in here, I'm really going to fuck shit up. I'm really going to like come at this from a distinct way so that, you know, I'm making a mark. I'm making a mark, not just with my art, but on the way we're functioning here.
Right. Yeah, that's a big one. My first instinct to that question is, I know that no matter who's on the other side of the table, I will forever be making my work. Mm. That if the scale doesn't change right now, there's nothing that's going to stop me from doing what I'm doing. And I'm willing to play the game and do the smiling and all of the things that come with giving up some of yourself in order to be sick, quote unquote, financially successful in the entertainment industry. I'm happy to play the game. I'm really good at playing the game, actually. And I also enjoy it in some spaces. There are some spaces where I'm like, I actually do enjoy being happy and exuding joy. That's like also a part of who I am. So I enjoy that element of it, but there are certain, you know, things that exist within the industry that are just trying to take from you and not, you know, take your story and put it on a bigger platform, but trying to diminish you, distill you down to the simplest form of what your voice is in order to fit their voice in it and mash it up and turn it into something that actually doesn't look like you anymore. And I think, yeah, I think that that's kind of where I've landed with it is who, no matter who you are across the table from me, we can have this, we can do this. But the truth is that I actually feel like I have the power because I'm the one with the imagination and I'm the one who's never going to stop using that imagination to create work. And turns out bit by bit over the course of the last few years, I don't have a huge following, but my following is growing. There are people in the world who have never met me, who I do not know, who actually are fans and write to me and like, are sweet and kind and all of those things. And that interaction, I would not trade in for giving up my whole self to paint the wall with my black on one side and paint the wall with my gay on the other side. And then, you know, it's like, get on my knees and bow down to the greatness of the industry because that's what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think that the generations were changing. It's, you know, as our voices get into the room, it is time for you to hear different and new things. And as folks are aware of all of, you know, the abuse that's happening in the industry, I think people are becoming more sensitive to the things that they say. And so I think there is a learning that is happening. It's just, it's happening bit by bit. And I think as we move into this social media creator culture, we're gonna consistently be having things to say. And I think that that will not stop. I think it'll only grow.
Yeah. I was having this conversation with my husband. He's the only person I talk to. We've been in lockdown. Have you heard of, there's a pandemic. Yeah.
It's like quarantines.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like some quarantines.
Quarantines. We were talking about something with Quentin Tarantino, because something came up about Kill Bill and the car accident that, what's her name? Uma Thurman was in dirt. Like, he essentially, like, he made her do her own stunt, and she got in and she didn't want to do it. And he basically, like, pushed her into doing it. And she got injured. And, like, this video came out recently, or maybe not recent. I don't know, but it came out and this whole story came up again. And he and I were talking about, he said something like, Quentin Tarantino, like, I think that's, like, part of how he directs. Like, he's like from what I've heard, this might be wrong, right? This is just like two kids in Queens talking about Quentin Tarantino. So I don't know.
Right.
You know, I heard that he's like almost method in that way, or he wants his actors to be method in that way and whatever. And he's like, so I guess, and I was like, that's bullshit. I do not believe that you need to bully actors into doing their work. Like, then if you feel like you need to do that, then maybe you should have cast someone that fit the role better than you thought. But we were talking about it and we're like, that is such a like early 2000s, late 90s thing to get away with and like hold up on a pedestal. But to your point, like the more that there is a broader range of people getting into rooms and having conversations and creating work and watching new work and decentering whiteness and decentering straightness and all of that, then the more we're not going to accept these things that were just when you and I were getting our backstage newspaper, like we accepted them then. I mean, right. I won't speak for us. I accepted them then. Like, oh yeah, that sucks, but that's really tough. That's what you have to do, I guess, because that's right. What he expects because he's a director. And now that I'm a director, I'm like, I would never do that to an actor because I have too much respect for my actors. I have too much respect for the crew. And I'm just grateful that everyone showed up on set today. Like,
right.
So to make something. But it's, I guess I don't really have anywhere to go with that, but like, fuck that if that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wild.
And I might be not accurate.
I don't know. A good friend of mine, Dana Gurrier, she was in Django.
Oh, yes.
And then he liked her so much because she's one of these actors who's truly, she's going to do the work. Like, yeah. I don't think that I ever understood, like, what it meant to dive into a character and do the work of being an actor until becoming friends with Dana. I'm like, oh, shit, like, you work like a ditch digger, but, like, in acting. But he ended up writing her role for her. He, like, asked her to come back to do The Hateful Eight. Mm. So she's in The Hateful Eight. And so I've just brought that up to balance out the Quentin Tarantino hate. But I also think that that practice that you mentioned is like absolutely just disgusting. And it just should not be. It just really should not be.
Well, and also to like keep it even here, I think when that video came out with Uma Thurman, like a couple months ago or whatever it was, he was like, I'm sorry, you know, which is ultimately where we want to be, right? Like, we can't undo the shittiness that has happened, but we can apologize. We can like atone. And I think that that's as we're talking, I'm realizing, I think that that may be an important part of like the process of rebuilding the industry, like having a chance to like for people to atone for their mistakes. And I'm not saying like, you know, it kind of gets into cancel culture a little bit, but I just mean in terms of like something like that, where like, it feels like there was pressure to do something that someone wasn't comfortable doing. And now it sounds like he wouldn't do that. Like, you know, and that is, and I think that is a good thing moving forward.
Yeah.
You go.
Yeah. Well, that has made me think about this thing that I've been feeling in the pandemic, in the pre-post pandemic, as we're living in New York City. I know the rest of the world is not as open as we are, and there are people actively dying right now. But here in New York, there's this culture where we're back, where, you know, bars are open late night, and a lot of the success and a lot of the things that I've been dealing with in my career has been happening from my computer inside the apartment most of the year. All of these meetings have been virtual through Zoom, and it's all been in here. And so now that the world is opening and I'm having to go out again and commute again and do all of these different things, and like social events are happening and I'm going to see a theater show tomorrow night, I'm feeling like, wait a minute, can somebody cut a ribbon or like stop and acknowledge the fact that this is like slowly ending? Or the idea I had today, and I actually might even like start an event for it or something, but I think we should applaud that July 1st is when the city is officially opening up again. And we were doing that 7 p.m. applaud for essential workers back in the day. But I think that we as a collective people need to stop and acknowledge that we've all been through something in some kind of way, whether it's an applause or Joe Biden gets a ribbon or like something has to happen. And I feel that way about what you're saying as far as, you know, atonement. Like, so you've done something wrong, and let's actually do something practical that acknowledges how we're going to move forward. It's not just I'm sorry. It's an I'm sorry. Let's be together quietly. Let's state our intentions for how we're going to move forward and how we know that what we did is fucked up, and then we can move forward. Because for me, sorry feels like the beginning of something that ultimately could turn into nothing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I completely agree. It's kind of like the sorry, the quote unquote sorry, I'm using air quotes, is like what brands do when there's social unrest.
Right.
They're like, oh, by the way, we're for racial justice.
Mm-hmm. Like we are.
Here's a black
screen. We're also for you seeing our logo and buying our products.
And what you're talking about with like, sorry is the beginning. And also what you said about like stating our intentions moving forward. Mm-hmm. I feel like and also what you're talking about was like this collective kind of deep breath and this collective kind of healing that we need to do. I think that art and, you know, art in the broadest sense, not high art, not, you know, just like art.
Right. Expression.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. Is
Jinx. Well, did we say that at the same time? I can't
we
tell.
Did. We did. Mercury. Thanks. In retrograde did not keep us apart from saying that at the same time.
No.
But that it is a way to set an intention, you know, and move forward. And, you know, a lot of times with art, I don't know if you feel this in what you make or in what you like to watch or like to consume as far as art goes, but I feel like it's the kind of thing where there are these two ideas, right? Or three or four, 18. And we don't know what the connection is, but the audience makes the connection between those ideas. You know,
yes.
It's like, I'm not hitting you over the head with my moral of the story. What I'm doing is showing you these two things that maybe don't seem like they go together, but then you as the audience member are going to make meaning out of it. And I feel like that's the art that we really need right now. Do you feel any of that?
Yeah. I for sure. Especially because I'm not a person that is very much into being super literal. Whenever I've taken writing classes or something, the thing is always like what you got to just be specific. And I'm like, I want you to think about this. Like, I don't want to just tell you the damn thing. I really want there to be an experience where we go into it. And I'm not saying that I'm a great writer and that whoever gave me those kinds of notes is wrong. I'm just saying that I value the rights of an audience member to take what they'd like to take from a thing.
Yes. And I don't think as an artist, I will ever feel equipped to give anyone the moral of the story. Mm-hmm. Like, this is why I'm in therapy.
Right.
Right. I figured right. out in right. my own life, how would I ever be able to tell you? It's like, yeah. Like I feel like a lot of art is about witnessing, right? And right. what's interesting is it must be because I changed my therapy appointment to Wednesdays and this is a Wednesday. So I'm like all about therapy right now.
Let's do it.
Let's go there. Yeah. But like we've been talking about trauma and what helps process trauma. And I had a really, really difficult labor with my daughter. And there was a lot of physical trauma involved and emotional. And I was saying that like one thing that really helped me in that process was writing poetry, because I just wrote it all down. I was like, yeah, that hurt. This hurts. This made me cry. This made me feel like X, like not making meaning out of it, but just witnessing, just witnessing it. And I feel like right now, I wonder what you think about this idea of art bearing witness to this moment in time.
Yeah, I think that I really love normalizing telling simple stories. I think that we don't, as a culture, talk about little moments in the sandbox enough, that we are telling in our social circles the same damn stories over and over and over again, because they're the things that come up, because the weather is the first thing that we talk about. And so then there's like it gets pared down from there. And before you know it, we haven't scratched the surface of how the person is actually doing across from us.
Right.
And I think normalizing, yes, saying this, like this hurts, or this made me cry, like just hearing you say those words in that moment, that just automatically brings me into that space. Yeah. And I don't have to have had a child in order to understand what kind of intense hurt that would feel like, or what that would be, or what would make you cry in that scenario. No matter what that is, it makes me want to continue listening. It draws me in to there being something authentic about that expression. And yeah, I think our art, a lot of the art that we consume and a lot of the stuff that gets sold as well, or gets bought, it's this weird cycle where like our media keeps us stupid. And now when you have an artist who wants to make something that's smart, they can't, because the money is being made off of everyone being stupid. So I have to create capitalism. Something that fits into the mold of the mushy mind that you've made in, I don't know, the middle of Texas or Kansas or whatever. Like, love y'all in Texas and Kansas. And I think that it's great if you're from there, but you know, the industry, Hollywood is making stuff. They're making shows like Bones and I don't know, Bones. I've never watched Bones, but like, it's just like that kind of show that appeals to a middle-minded person who's cooking and watching television, and they don't have to get it because the TV is going to tell them over and over again what it is. And I'm just not interested in making work that way. I'm interested in making work that turns corners and tells simple stories.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I'm so grateful you articulated that, because it's just, as from one artist to another, it's just really powerful to hear that, because I feel the same way in telling simple stories. And even like trying to think through this idea that I have in my head now for the MLMs, you know, I'm walking my daughter to her music class or whatever, and I'm like thinking through it and I'm muddling through it. And I'm thinking like, well, doesn't it have, wait, but the stakes need to be, blah, you know, like so big. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, the stakes in my life have been big, and I have not had, I mean, I've lived a pretty like average life. You know what I mean? Like a very, like, I'm not like feeling bad about myself. Like I'm
right.
Just,
no,
like,
I get it.
I haven't landed on the moon, you know, I'm not an astronaut. I'm not, you know, but, you know, there is something that can be really painful about washing the dishes. There's a wholeness that I feel when I get to see someone's pain expressed, because ultimately it echoes some kind of pain that I felt. And it's like, you know how the body, like no one will ever, you know, my husband was in the labor room with me, and like he was there and he saw all of it. God help him. And
no, God help you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
but he was the closest, and he was like deeply involved and invested and had his own trauma with it for sure. But as much as I could tell him how it felt, he could never be in my body, right? Like that's just the way it is. And vice versa for everyone. Like for us to be able to have the stories and the spaces to get a glimpse of something that makes us feel that our own life is witnessed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
That is so, that is so meaningful.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I think a lot of award-winning stuff sometimes does that, where like mm-hmm. you watch, you know, a character drops a coin and we get to watch the coin slowly roll across the hardwood floor. And it's like Oscar, you know, because like, your quarter falls, you watch it fall, you go get it. But what is it like to live in that experience and see that experience slow down? And we all can then relate to it. It's also like, why we never see anybody sneeze on television? Why we never see anybody yawn on TV? Like these are very simple, but nobody accidentally farts on television. Why?
Yes.
Why? Yes. Like these are like little things that's like, it just doesn't make sense that they aren't a part of the life that we see on in our media and in the things that we consume.
Yeah. It's like in the rom-coms where they stay over at each other's apartment or something, but like no one's pooping or peeing.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Like you poop.
Yeah.
And you pee.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of the greatest television, some of the greatest scenes in television happen on a toilet, you know, like,
yes,
I was just watching Euphoria recently. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a whole thing. Yeah. I'm not even going to say anything, but there's some stuff that happens on a toilet and you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
My question to you is this: if you were going to give advice to folks who are not at the beginning of their career, but more like in the middle, more like they've been grinding, they've been doing the thing, they've been trying, they've gotten, you know, a pat on the back here or there, but like they haven't gotten their big break. If you're going to give those people advice, what would you say to them?
This is me talking to me, actually, but I think it's that you really gotta find ways to take care of yourself. That there needs to be a culture around making space to take care of yourself, because what we do is expression. What we do is express ourselves, and the more we're able to be whole within ourselves, the better we will be able to be at our jobs. Are you hearing that dog barking?
I am, and I love it.
Okay, good. Yeah, and I do have practices. I do have things that I enjoy doing that help me to take care of myself, but it's not in my schedule. It's just, I reach my limit and then I think, oh, right. You gotta go, whatever. You gotta go take a bath. You gotta go smoke some weed. Like, I'm not a big pothead, but I know that every time I've smoked weed, I feel much better about my life and myself. And I need to listen to Nina Simone.
Yes.
This is my resting place. It's like, yes, in the tub with Nina Simone and some candles and like a whiskey neat. And like, and like truly like making sure all that happens, like cleaning, yes, the bathroom before it all happens to make sure that it's all right and it's all good.
Yes.
And yeah, and that I can be in there and do my damnedest to not worry.
You know, I have chills all over my body because first of all, Nina Simone is a goddess, and yes, I wish I knew how it feels to be free is the best song of all time. Like, yeah, bar none.
It's so good.
It's so fucking good.
And yeah, it's so good.
So magical. But what you're saying, even about cleaning the bathtub, right, kind of brings me back to a couple of things, like what we were talking about, telling simple stories, and something that I'm trying to do. You know, having a child kind of complicates things. It's really wonderful. It's not for everybody. Everybody has their thing that complicates things. You know what I mean? Falling in love can complicate things. Breaking, yes, up can complicate things. There are a lot, yes, going to school, moving, you know, whatever. I'm not centering motherhood, but I felt very out of sorts this year. We had a pandemic.
I heard about it. It's like, yeah, a big panini. It's like a big old panini's grant.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I felt out of sorts, and I have been thinking, like, literally in the past week or two, I think one of my self-care practices, and not self-care in like a capitalist way of, mm-hmm, like, what do I need to buy to make myself better?
Right.
But in a truly deep sense of groundedness is cleaning the apartment. Yeah. And how that simple thing, like going back to the idea of telling simple stories, as an artist, some of those simple tasks are where there's meaning made. And it's almost like you're creating sacred space. You know, I'm scrubbing the table because she wiped pasta sauce all over it. But that's
classic.
Right. And it's a white table. So it's like really bad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Crusted. Yeah.
But that motion, right? There's something sacred in that motion because it's a motion, it's a physical movement that people have been doing ever since there were tables.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Or ever since we were standing upright and we needed to like clean our skin or whatever it was, right? There's something I feel like sacred about that. And so when you're talking about like scrubbing the bath down so you can get in there and you can relax, like there's a whole kind of sacred meaning we can take even not when doing our artistic work, just in living our lives.
Right. Yeah. That's a thing. I do think that I take wherever I am, there I am. Right. Like I'm usually about 5-10 minutes late to places that I'm going, because wherever I am, I'm 100% there. Mm. And that's how I build my world and make my work. And that's how I bathe myself. Like, yes, that's how I sleep. You know, like, I'm not really someone that goes half in on a lot of things. I'm usually, if I'm in something, I'm in it. And yeah, that's, I think a lot of people look at that. And, or in my experience, I've had folks who are like a little intimidated or put off by the fact that like, I might show up in a gold lion necklace, or, you know, I might show up fully dressed in a fur collar in the winter. And they're like, wow, like you got dressed. I'm like, no, this is just what I choose to do. Right. I am, as far as I'm concerned, my art is everything about me. And it also seeps into my self-care practice. And man, cleaning, that's a whole word, like the circles, yeah, of cleaning. That's a very beautiful thing. Since the beginning of time, we've been making those cleaning circles. That's gorgeous.
I know I'm keeping you so long, and I promise to give you back your time. But I'm wondering, especially because you're bringing up, you know, entering a room with a fur collar, because that's how you're showing up. We hit a little bit on this with social media, and presenting yourself there. Has fear ever stopped you from creating or sharing something?
Yeah. Well, not from fully going through with it. I think I'll have the fear, but still do the thing. I think a lot of folks have this desire to not upset their mother.
Mm-hmm.
That my mom is watching or seeing or listening to the things that I do. And so there's a little adjustment that might happen because of her ear specifically. Or, you know, maybe I have a cousin who thinks like, this boy shakes his booty too much. I think that those things creep in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, my mom fully has, we've talked about it before. She's like, you always doing something nasty. You always doing something nasty. And like, I love it. I don't know why you got to curse so much, but it's just funny. And she's like, I think there's only been one thing that she hasn't shared, or maybe she did after we had a conversation, but there was something about like, you know, the people at church, I don't necessarily want to put that on and share it. But I do think that she ultimately did after a conversation where I was like, you know, that doesn't matter. Like those people are who they are, and they're not on my path. They're not doing what I'm doing. And you happen to have a son who's onto some shit. So if they feel some type of way about it, they can go back to the bayou and get in a canoe and go talk to alligators. I don't know what they do. Like, just keep doing it. That's your life. Do that.
I think that's I think that's so alive in your work. This, not that you don't have, not fearlessness, but action and initiative and a kind of like a force behind your work that feels like an inertia going. And I think I'm asking you that question because I have so much fear in my work.
Oh yeah, me too. I'm terrified. All the time in my life, I'm always afraid. I'm always nervous. Yes. I'm full of anxiety. I cry all the time.
Yes.
But my fear or my work combats that. It's like, in my work, I get to not be those things in an attempt to display it for others and also teach myself in the process.
Yes. Yes. Like the work becomes a tool in a way. And I think, you know, for me, I think a lot of my fear has stopped me from a lot of things. And it has also led me down a path that I was, that led me to an MLM, among other things. Like fear really had its grip like around my neck for a long time and kind of, you know, closed in around my throat. And now I'm at a point of like releasing that big hand and finding my voice. Mm. And I guess the reason why I'm asking and bringing it up because it is because your work seems to be like full-throated Joseph. This is you. This is what you have to say. And I think what's truly so beautiful about your story and what I'm, you know, learning as we're talking is how seemingly unflappable that connection is. I don't want to speak for your experience because life is complicated and nuanced, but from the outside, it feels like that, like you had used the word channeling earlier in our conversation. It feels like that channel is deeply connected between you and your ability to say what it is you'd like to say. And I don't really have a question. I just wanted to
thank
say
you.
That. I just wanted to tell you that because it's a place where I don't feel confident, but I'm working my hardest to get there for multiple reasons. And it's really beautiful to be able to see an artist like you do that so beautifully and elegantly. And it's really cool.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. It is work, but
yeah,
it is also the only thing that I want to be doing. So
yeah. I promise this is the last question. What does success feel like to you?
Success. I think when I think, and I think I've felt this way in so many ways for a very long time, that thinking about success feels like hosting a party in a really nice home that I own. That like, I don't necessarily think that it's having a lot of money, or not that it's not that. And I don't think that it's necessarily being famous, and not that it's not that, but I think to have the power to take care of and also bring joy to people that you love, and then those people bring new people who they love in a setting where like there's a pool in the backyard,
yes,
and people can just be in it and you don't have to work. Like I've done my liberation, my movie on with comedy and liberation, and like that's in the can. Mm-hmm. And we're done, and somebody who's brilliant at barbecuing is barbecuing, and I've made this space for everyone, and none of us have to worry. I think Nina Simone says that, like, you know, freedom is no fear. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something about the joy in being at a party with people that you love and having no fear. And I think that that would be, I would feel like, okay, this is success.
That is gorgeous. That is so beautiful. And you are just a delightful human being.
Thank you. Likewise.
I think that it is so enlivening to hear you speak about where you are in your journey right now, because I feel you crossing into this big realm. And I also feel you, again, just a reflection, staying so rooted to who you are in a profound way. Mm. And that image of everyone celebrating in this freedom from fear is like, yeah, that's it. Yeah. What else do we want?
Yeah, that's actually what we all want.
Yeah.
That the job and the money and all of the stuff along the way is this like weird distraction towards vacation. It's like, oh, you have to get a job so that you can do whatever you want. It's like, wait, no, actually, I think that you confused that.
Yes.
Because if I'm having to work to get what I want, this is all strange now.
It's almost like capitalism doesn't work.
Yeah. If I have to work for my vacation, then what are we doing?
What are we doing? We made up money.
Yeah.
Man, I could go on and on talking to you, but I'm going to let you have a day because you probably had a long one and have a long one tomorrow.
That's very true.
Yes. And I very much appreciate you taking the time, and thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Courtney. I really appreciate it.
And that was Joseph, just an absolute gem of a human being. So don't forget to follow him and Joe My Ray Productions. All of that information is in the show notes below. Don't forget to follow us at Queensbird Films on Instagram. There are going to be a few exciting things coming up this summer. So you'll definitely want to make sure that you're following us and signed up for our newsletter. All of that, again, is in the show notes. So take a peek down there. And thanks for being here. I hope you have a beautiful, wonderful day. I'll talk to you soon.